You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I'm Joseph Silverswag. It is nice to be back. Sorry about last week. There was a lot to talk about, but we were both really busy, and it was hard to talk about. I'm not sure how productive it would have been to...
Well, and some of the things that we were going to talk about before life got crazy for both of us still are relevant. It is still relevant. So we will talk some offense on the Utes today, obviously, Utah fans. But before we get started, let me give you the layout. We're gonna give you Daddy and what he's trying to do with the process some
it's
love.
It's really cool. Yeah,
it's really cool. We'll share that with you. We're gonna do the quick hitters. Talk about the athletic schedules. Some cool news coming up with the Pac-12 gymnastics championship to plug that, and then we'll get into the offense, Washington State, and what we expect. So hold on to your horses, people. Get a good hold or buckle up or whatever you want to say, because it's going to be a doozy today. Nonetheless, let's start with you, Daddy, because, you know, we like to plug the process. It's nice to give plugs to our fellow Ute fans that are out there trying to do good things or with good businesses. So if you'd like to get a plug, let us know. We'll do it. But even cooler, though, is he's trying to get together a community help project where he either helps – those in need, disabled veterans, elderly, whatnot, with their yard care by getting some people together to go do the work for them. Mowing the lawn, trimming, maybe some irrigation help and fertilizer, whatever it be. But get a few people together, go help them out. And he's trying to get this up and running. So if you don't follow it or haven't seen it, go to @UteDaddy on Twitter. He's got a link up there. And go see how you can help support this. This is just, it's really cool that he's put the process together. I assume he's getting some compensation for it. And then to turn around and do some good with it is awesome, for lack of words right now.
Yeah, it's really, really great. We really appreciate it. I mean, you take something like that that kind of takes off unexpectedly, and you make a little money off of it, which is great for him, and he's a real entrepreneur. But then to take the next step and decide to help people and do good, I think is really awesome and testament to his character.
Yeah, so go support you, Daddy. Let's get into the quick hitters. So the first one, some cool news that dropped, let's see here, according to the Utah website, dropped at about 10:05 today.
Yeah, gymnastics Twitter had it early. Utah Gymnastics Twitter.
The Pac-12 Gymnastics Championships are going to be at the Maverick Center here in Utah the next 3 years, which is awesome. Well, I love that they're calling it a neutral site in the press release.
Yeah, that's great. It's really nice. And remember, positioning in the preseason really – or the regular season really matters for what group you're in. I'm thinking back to our conversation with Beth Rizzo last year about that, or early this year, about how much it matters to score well. So it's nice to have the home, advantage. And Mavericks, where they do the Grizzlies games, it's off 2:15, really convenient. I went to a Grizzlies game last hockey season, and it's a great venue. It should be really fun.
Yeah, totally agree. Should be fun. Nonetheless, it'll be fun to go cheer on the Utes in the Pac-12 title because they're going to win it, right? 3 years now. Yeah. They're going to win it for 3 years. Another thing worth accolades is the golf team is going at it.
Like golf clap.
Yeah. That's a very nice golf clap. Nice. Thank you. And as of yesterday, they took second in the Mark Simpson Invitational, but the cool part is Kyler Dunkel won the tournament, and he's a senior on the Utah golf team. So
the whole thing, shebang.
Yeah. So nonetheless, kudos to Mr. Dunkel. If I'm pronouncing your name wrong, please let me know. I apologize for that. Other quick hitters, scheduling, before we get to another one that I have a quote I want to read to you, Joseph.
Yeah, we're all thinking of that quote right now.
Yeah, so.
Are they going to talk? Yes, we are. Almost there.
Nonetheless, soccer against Arizona tomorrow. We've got Washington State in volleyball on Friday, and then Washington State football on Saturday, and then the golf's champion, the golf teams in Wisconsin, and then volleyball's back at Washington. So it's a good week of
good stuff.
Sports. There's some lot to cheer on. And so follow the other Utah sports teams. We've got some good quality Pac-12 talent.
Yeah, don't lose sight of how successful a lot of those teams are. It's not just football, basketball, and gymnastics. There's a lot of good teams. And I know that was a focus of Mark Harlan at his previous job. So I expect him to continue to push the Olympic sports, which part of what makes him a good fit for the U and for the Pac-12. But let's talk about, speaking of the Pac-12, let's talk about commissioner. I'm just trying to use accurate, non-editorialized terms. Commissioner Larry Scott, who decided that he had something he wanted to say about. So if you haven't been following every Pac-12 game, I'm sure you remember some targeting calls that were and weren't called against Washington, and you would be forgiven for drawing the conclusion that there was a
conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theory. And I think, in the absence of actual evidence of a conspiracy theory, you probably shouldn't run around saying it. But it very much appeared from that sample that the referees were calling too many and pretty ridiculous targeting plays, calls against the Utes at ejecting crucial players at critical times for no good reason. And to go along with that, we're allowing Washington, who's the bigger brand, higher ranked team, to get away with, murder is putting too fine a point on it, but not that too fine of a point, looking at what they were doing to Britton Covey in particular. And then you saw it again the next week. On Friday, Washington State played USC, and you saw the exact same thing, where there are some hits that, and one in particular, Porter Gustin put on the quarterback.
That was brutal.
And the quarterback's getting tackled around the ankles. I called it tankle. For those, it's not called that. I just said it. Getting tankled. And as he's falling forward, Porter Gustin just launches himself
straight
head first,
at his head.
Eyes down, straight at his head. Absolutely unambiguous. No other way to read that play. It was a dirty, head-hunting tackle.
It was targeting.
And he crushed him.
Yeah.
And put his safety in serious jeopardy, and it wasn't called.
Nope. Not even reviewed.
Yeah, and had it been called, Washington State would have won the game. It was at a critical, or much more likely to win the game, as a critical moment. It was also a late hit. He was already tackled and he already completed the throwing motion. So it was really bad. Anyway, read the Larry Scott quote.
So the direct quote was,
I rub my temples. You can't see me, but maybe you can hear it in my voice.
I'm going to read beyond, since you just gave us the lineup of what happened with Gustin, here's what it says after that part. Scott said he had consulted the officiating team about that call. He said every play is reviewed. Start quote. So you can certainly assume that play got a lot of looks, not just from the replay booth at the stadium, but we've got our command center back in San Francisco with our head of officiating and a bunch of experienced replay guys who absolutely would have looked at that play. He, end quote. He said, referring to Scott, he said it also was looked at afterward and it was not determined to be targeting.
And that's just absurd. It's just absurd. Where you could come out and you could say, we missed that one. Sorry, guys. Yeah, that would have been
that
was
better.
An important call, and we missed it. Or no comment might also have been, but just to come out there and lie through your teeth to everybody. Yeah. I mean, it is not editorializing for me to say that tackle was textbook targeting in every single sense of the term, according to the definition and according to what the rule is supposed to be about, which is protecting players' heads.
Yeah.
And so it's just really baffling and continues to create an impression that there's something nefarious going on. And like I said, that's a very big accusation to make in the absence of like an email between a couple of referees or something like that, that you actually have some evidence. But as a perception, it's undeniable. And from a marketing perspective, it's a disaster because it makes the games not fun to watch. Need to tell Ute fans, I mean, Washington wasn't fun. And it wasn't only not fun because the offense didn't score, although that was certainly part of it. It was not fun because it didn't feel fair. It didn't feel like there was an equal contest.
Yep.
And that's a fundamental entertainment problem if your fan base feels that there's an unfairness. And right, like, I don't mind if officiating is inaccurate. What I mind is if it's biased. And when one team is getting all the calls, it's a serious problem. And when that happens week in and week out, and it's always the brand teams getting the call, it's an even more serious problem. And it's inexcusable to pretend it's not happening when it clearly is.
Right. And first of all, something I would love to do, the Utah defense deserves some credit. I mean, we lost a starting safety, starting DT, didn't change. The defense performance against Washington was fantastic.
It was
great,
amazing.
Job.
And the only time they really slipped, for my eye, I mean, there were a couple of plays where they scored and got off the edge.
Well,
but the only time where the defense didn't look good was immediately after the Fotu ejection. There were about 40 yards of field, and they just ran right up the middle, right into the backup DT, and it worked. And it's not that I can't remember who they put out there, but it's not that he's bad and he had a great game the rest of the game, but in that moment, the psychology of it makes it really difficult. And you're just not ready to go, you know, because the other guy was in 2 seconds ago. And so I think it did have an effect on the game because that drive should have stopped. That was an interception, as you recall, on that play.
Well,
Fotu hit.
Didn't
even really hit.
That interception was coming back either way, though. It was a roughing the passer.
That's right, because it was
targeting.
A late hit. Yeah.
It was coming
And the
back.
Roughing the passer call was fair. The hit was a little late.
Yeah.
When I say fair, it was I wouldn't have blamed you fans for throwing up their hands and groaning about it. Which is part of being a football fan, and I think totally fine. But it was within the scope of the rule and a little shady, but not bad. But the targeting was
ridiculous.
I have words. No, that's not the word in my head, but this is a family show.
We don't have the explicit mark next
yeah,
to
right,
our
seriously,
podcast,
that's
so.
Where I want to go, but we're not going to go there.
All right.
But I think probably enough said at this point. Like, it's something to keep an eye on, and it's part of the Larry Scott problem. He's got a whole fight. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes, that's what I'm trying to say. He's got a whole file
folder. Let me cut to the chase
of problems. And this is one of them, and the Pac-12 needs a new commissioner. Bad.
Badly.
Because we need better deals.
Go steal the
SECs.
Better
games. It just needs to be better. Yeah.
Yeah, totally agree. There's plenty officiating's in a bad spot.
Oh, it's a national story and disgrace. Every week it's a hashtag.
Yeah.
It's all over the country. And
hashtag
people tune in
press.
To say, wow, what are they going to get wrong this time? And he hasn't done anything to even fix the perception. To say, I'm bringing in this experienced NFL referee. We're going to issue these statements every week saying, here's what we got wrong. Here's how we're working on. We're going to release grades for our referees.
Yeah, take some
That's
ownership.
The kind of stuff that would make people go, oh, well, they're working on it, and they're not doing it. And then you add that to DirecTV, which is not change. I've heard multiple times, like, we're stuck. We're not getting DirecTV.
It's not going
to
change.
And that's a catastrophe. And so is a bunch of other stuff. So,
yeah,
hit the road, Larry.
All right. So let's talk about the Utes now. Because
Utes?
Have a game
Saturday. Is this some kind of podcast about the Utes? Okay.
Yeah.
Did you say?
I mean, look, we could do a whole show of Let's Fire Larry Scott, but so
we did one of those.
Interesting
before the season.
Tidbits. I thought after the Washington game that directly apply to the Washington State game, which are Covey and Whittingham both talked about simplifying the offense.
There was so much funky stuff, and it would get a guy open. It would work, but it would also discombobulate the offense, and it wouldn't be as effective as it could be because it was, you know, you have a guy coming left across the formation, another guy drops back into the fullback, and then the quarterback does a two-step, and suddenly, yes, Britton Covey is open on the edge, but also nobody's looking in the right direction, and the defense is where they need to be. I mean, the fundamental issue with the defense against Washington was Washington knew where the ball was going to be, which let them light
obliterate Britton Covey.
Britton Covey and everybody else. And by the end of the night, you don't want to catch that ball. I don't want to catch a ball if a 215-pound defensive back is going to hit me at 40 miles an hour.
But here's the thing. Covey's the only one catching the ball.
Yes, that is another huge drops. Or I think Power Football Focus has 28 drops for the Utes. Somebody else had 25. Drops are a tricky stat, right? It's all about how you watch the film. So it's really hard to count. It's really hard to compare nationally because – you can't have the same guy watching every second of every team's film. There's too much. So you have one guy counting things as drops and another guy not. So it's a very difficult stat to count with. But
either
there
way,
have been a lot. And they've been catchable. And it's been frustrating. And some of it's on Huntley. He's coming in hot a lot. But
those
the wide
balls
receiver's
are hitting
job
hands
is to catch the ball. And they're wearing these gloves. And I don't know if you guys have ever played with wide receiver gloves, like expensive ones like these guys wear. They are made out of some unknown plastic thing, and everything sticks to them. You can like touch a ball and it will like come up with your hand, and there's no glue on them. It's just this like micro grip stuff. It's unacceptable, the amount of drops. Obviously there's a was that fourth and goal? Yes, fourth and goal play.
Oh, yeah.
That stands out.
Him right in the hands.
That just, you have absolutely no business. And would it be nice to have a quarterback who could, like, dovetail those in? Sure. But he's hitting them in the hands and in the numbers, and they're not coming away with them.
And they've been practicing. It's not like he cannot just change his throws in games.
He's
like,
got a very strong arm. So if you're 4 yards away from him, it's going to hit you pretty hard. And they should know. And they've been practicing with him throwing the ball. And guess what? Good quarterbacks throw the ball really fast. That's part of what makes them good quarterbacks. Get used to it. But they've been practicing. I mean, they've been the, you know, jugs machine and the tennis ball machine and all this stuff. And it's just,
see, this is where
baffling to me.
I
that
like
it just falls apart in games. And we know Guy Holliday's wide receiver coach. BYU receivers didn't drop all the time when he was at BYU. He knows how to teach them how to catch the ball. And that's not like on him. It's on the players. They have to
execute. That's where Covey comes in here, right? His quotes after the game, the last two games, NIU and Washington, he's mentioned that catching in game is more a mental thing. Now, I'm a basketball guy. I love playing ball. I'll be playing bright and early
drops
tomorrow.
Those threes like
and
rain.
But the moment you have an off game and your shots aren't falling, it starts
head.
To get in your head. Yeah. And I'm wondering if that's what's happened to the wide receivers. We came in with Simpkins saying he's going to be the best wide receiver in the country.
And now he's
and
wondering.
We started all of the talk. I mean, there was a ton of hype on these wide receivers and the offense in general, and now they haven't delivered. So how much even more are those drops and lack of performance in their head to where, like Covey has stated, the mental part of it isn't happening? Because look, these guys got recruited as wide receivers. They're wide receivers for a Division I team, the Utes, who are very competitive.
And I've watched them play in practice. Yeah. I've watched Damari Simpkins lay out on his side and reach out with one hand and catch a ball 8 feet away from him while a all-Pac-12 defensive back is hugging him around the waist. I mean, he can make incredible plays, and they all can. So why aren't they? I mean, my thing, and I've come back to this a lot throughout the years, I think it comes down to a fundamental lack of confidence in the coaching staff, in themselves. And they panic so fast when things aren't working. And it's Whittingham at the core.
You're saying it's fundamental lack of consequence of
confidence.
Confidence.
The coaches' lack of confidence in themselves.
In the wide receivers.
No, in them. In the coaches. In what they're doing. Where
Whittingham wants to run it more.
Well, it doesn't matter what he wants to do.
I don't understand.
So Whittingham doesn't believe that the offense is going to work. And so as soon as the offense stops working, everybody panics and they stop doing what they've always been doing and what has worked in practice. And they start adding wrinkles and changing things. And maybe we should have a different play caller, and maybe we should move personnel, and maybe we should try running the ball more, and maybe we should try the air raid. And maybe if it works, it will work. And if they could just calm down
and give
and
it time,
keep doing the same thing that worked against Weber State, because guess what? That will work against almost anyone if you just stick to it. And I was amazed, and part of this was injury, as it appeared Zach Moss started to get injured. But early on in the game, they were doing kind of a run-focused thing. Zach Moss was driving the offense, and then they stopped. They started going to five-wide sets. They started running Huntley more. Huntley had that really great scramble up the left side, and it was after that play, the offense totally changed. And they started doing all these short dink-and-dunk passes, and the whole thing changed. And then it got to be late. But it wasn't 7-35, you know, it was 7-14. And they had a couple of fumbles in the third quarter.
Yeah, those wide receivers fumbles, man.
Oh, which should have been an incomplete passes, but that's back to the other
story.
One of them. And they changed the offense. Instead of just that was good enough to score except for these mistakes, so let's keep doing what we're doing and trust that we're not gonna make mistakes every third play, because they're not. That's just not how it works, unless you change everything, and then suddenly the mistakes multiply because you're applying a totally different strategy. And I think this stuff, like we want to talk about the offense doesn't have an identity. I think that's BS. It does have an identity. It's got a really good identity. The problem is you're
not what
willing.
People are saying.
I know, but they're
from
wrong.
The coaching staff.
The coaching staff is wrong. The players are wrong. They don't have confidence in the identity of the offense. And they are not willing to commit to the identity that the offense has because they don't have confidence. And I think that definitely starts with Whittingham. And you see it at its most basic in offensive coordinators. He's willing to fire offensive coordinators every year or two. Well, this isn't working. This isn't working. This isn't working.
Yet
or maybe
staying with the spread.
You just got a couple of drops, you know? I mean, that's the way this stuff works is people overreact. I mean, what makes what I do with numbers interesting is the most reliable thing about football fans, football analysts, and football coaches is that they will dramatically overreact to one or two plays.
Okay.
All the time. And if you can have the sort of stable mindset to say, I'm looking at this, I trust that the offense is going to work, then it works. And you see that with the defense all the time, right? I mean, that first, second drive of the game, Washington tore down the field. Didn't have any trouble. They were they had total control over the right edge of the field. Yep. They did whatever they wanted. They scored. And what did Utah change on defense? Nothing. They said, we're a good defensive team. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing. And I think if they would do that on offense, they would be what they really are, which is average to slightly above average, if they would just do what they're doing. And I think that goes for the red zone, too. You always hear, the red zone is a disaster. It's because you get to the 20 and suddenly you change the whole offense. Well, it doesn't work as well as what you did to get to the 20. Just don't change so much. Don't panic. Stay in control. So, and that's to the coaches. That's not to the fans, because there is a systematic problem. But I think the systematic problem is not trusting that the offense will work if you stick to what you did in practice.
So is that on Whittingham or is that on Troy Taylor? And let me just preface this. So Troy Taylor is supposedly on the hot seat, according to Twitter. However, like, we can't afford to fire Troy Taylor, is my opinion. But nonetheless,
I've heard that Troy Taylor is on the hot seat in a real way. Not just, I mean, certainly the fans are mad at him. But I've heard that his play calling duties are at risk, and so with that comes his job
security. Right, but at what point?
I think that's crazy. I think that's terrible.
It is crazy. He was offensive coordinator at Eastern Washington or whatever, and then we brought him up to the Pac-12, and now he's a coordinator at what I would like to think is a top level of college football. And
most national people would say that.
Yeah. And so, of course, there's a learning curve. And it seems like, to me, in his play calling, and I don't know how Whittingham is steering this, he might be overreacting based on your tirade about the identity and not trusting what identity.
That's harsh.
You were pretty fired up there.
Harsh but fair.
All right. So, like, that's on Troy Taylor, but I can say.
No, I think it's on Whit. I think it is.
So that means he's driving Troy Taylor into making mistakes.
I think it has
mistakes.
To do. He has developed this system where the second an offensive coordinator shows up, he's on a hot seat. Right? When you fired your last six guys, they know their job isn't safe, and they know if they don't score 35 points against Washington State this week. And I mean, I'm pulling that number out of the air, but that conversation may have happened. You know, where they say, look, you've got to score. You have to score. And if you don't score, you're in trouble. Your job is in trouble. So what's he going to do? He's going to freaking panic. And he's going to say, okay, I'm going to run this crazy play. And I'm going to switch out Damari Simpkins with Jalen Dixon. And I'm going to try Shelley at quarterback because I have to score. And that's why they're not going to score, because the best quarterback on the team is still Tyler Huntley. The best wide receiver on the team is still Damari Simpkins. And the best play is still four slants. You know, that hasn't changed. The fundamentals of the offense hasn't changed. What changes is the panic. And I think that it stems from Whittingham having conducted himself to not trust the offense over the last decade, and also stems from he not feeling like he has personal control over it. He's a defensive guy. He's good at defense. He understands defense. And so maybe has relinquished control a little bit, if that makes sense, or like relinquished his mental control, where he's saying, I make the defense work and I just need good enough from the offense. So I'm going to let Troy Taylor do that. But he's not really letting Troy Taylor do that, because there's no room to fail. I mean, you have to have room to not succeed. It has to be okay to score 7 against Washington. Notre Dame scored, 21 against some FBS bottom dweller 2 weeks ago. I mean, it happens. You have bad games. And even great offenses have bad games.
Yeah, and that's why, for me, the question is more becoming, look, we've allowed Kyle Whittingham, as fans, a lot of fans trust him, and the 80s office up there have trusted him, and he has mismanaged the offense and the offensive coordinator role.
he has mismanaged. To the point where it's now a systemic problem, an inescapable feeling of the sword of Damocles over any offensive coordinator.
And personally, my thoughts are, if he fires Troy Taylor, he's got to go. There's no way he's getting fixed.
He's not willing to take accountability for the – I mean, what I was saying at the end of the Washington game, and it's crazy, but I've now been thinking about it for almost 2 weeks, and I still think it's right. Kyle Whittingham should take over the offense. I think it's the idea that a guy who can scheme the best defenses in all of college football can't figure out how to beat defenses. I mean, it's like – I'm an attorney, right? But the best – prosecutor is a defense attorney. The best defense attorney is a prosecutor. It's the same thing. It's one's reactive, one's active, but the fundamental skills are all there. And right. I tell you who I know Kyle Whittingham trusts: Gary Anderson and Morgan Scali and Sharif Shah. He trusts those guys. He can say, you guys have the offense or the defense. You guys have the defense. Go get them. I am going to put my fingers into this offensive pie. I'm going to take personal accountability for how many points we score. And I think that's what he needs to do. And is that – does that sound like the crazy thing too? Yeah, yes. A little bit. But guess what? This isn't working. This whole I'm going to hire this guru and then tell him he's fired if he doesn't score 35 in his first four games. And it's not working. And I'm trying to think of, like, what's the big fundamental change you can make that would actually change things? And it's not Coach Harding. It's Coach Whittingham. He should be controlling the offense and not punting on it. I agree. I think that there's a sense of, well, if the offense isn't good, it's on whoever the offensive coordinator is. And that's just not true enough anymore.
The sample size is too big of offenses not – hitting the mark.
Six offensive systems now, and none of them have worked.
Here's the thing is,
and I don't care if it's zone left, zone right, off tackle left, zone right. I don't care. But he needs to take ownership of the offense.
Yeah. Look, his hires, some of them are completely like baffling. Like, they didn't make sense at the time. They didn't prove to work. And here we are where it's actually a hire that I think good with.
Yeah.
It was a good hire. Let's stop with this whole Troy Taylor needs to go. How about we let him actually call the game?
Right.
Whittingham needs to get out of his
way. And have the confidence to do that. And I think that Whittingham is saying, well, I'm not telling him what to do. And I believe that. I believe that he's not in there whispering in his ear about what to do, except to say maybe run the dang ball, which
– Oh, he's in his ear.
He is. Yeah, but I don't think he's like, try this play. No, don't call that one.
Yeah,
you know what
agreed.
I mean? I don't think he's running the offense. I wish he would, is what I'm saying. What is inescapable at this point is that he is the common denominator. He's
exactly.
The common thread. And it's not Andy Ludwig is a good offensive coordinator. He's very successful. Brian Johnson is a very successful coach. Where is he? Quarterbacks for Mississippi State? Or is he an OC again now?
I think he's at OC at Houston, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's OC at Houston. He's good. So it's not that he's hiring bad coaches, right? Troy Taylor, we know, is a good offensive coach. We know that. And you can see watching the offense how it's supposed to work. It's just not working. And I think that it's this buildup of pressure coupled with the abdication of responsibility, which is not a good combo because it makes the players and coaches feel expendable and the head coach feel invulnerable. And that's
correction.
Not right.
He was OC at Houston. He is now the quarterback coach at Florida.
That's a very successful career Brian Johnson is putting together. Coach Whittingham wasn't wrong when he told us this guy is a really good coach. He's really smart. He's got a really good head for quarterbacks and offenses, and I think he's going to be very successful. He was right. The only place he wasn't successful was at Utah.
Yeah, it was probably just a little early. honestly.
Yeah, but maybe not that early. Maybe true. If he'd been allowed to be OC for 4 years,
and
he'd
learn.
Be great. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what Troy Taylor needs, in my opinion. He's got to have time. Look, it's just like any good – well, I just think of it on – I work in a corporation, right? And you have your people that report to managers, that report to more middle managers and whatnot,
right? You have to trust
them. Every level on that pyramid of responsibility is going to make mistakes. But you have to trust your team to do the job that they have. And sure, there's going to be mistakes along the time, but you have to trust them. You let them learn, and they do better next time. That's what's going to happen in most organizations. But Whittingham, at this point, and I've backed him up in the past, but I'm starting to flip my coin listening to you today.
I'm gonna bring it back here a little bit after.
Now I'm ready to see him go at this point.
No,
you've talked me.
No, I'm still I still want a statue between. The 50s, no. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I think
– I love him.
I want – he needs – like, we've got to let Troy Taylor learn. He has to learn. Like you said, you know, he's been overreacting in his play calling. Well, how about let's stick to the game plan and stick with the offense. Right.
The way to get him to stop overreacting isn't to say, I'm pulling these 20 pages out of the playbook. It's to say, you know what? I trust you. We will talk about the offense in 6 weeks.
Yeah,
and I exactly. And other than that, you have total control. I am not interested in meddling. You know how to call an offense, and I trust you, and I guarantee you that you will be the offensive coordinator for week one next year. I think that's what he needs to hear.
That's exactly what is needed.
And I think the wide receivers need to hear, if you drop a pass, you can come back out. Yeah. You're not going to get benched for a drop pass.
Sharif
and
Shaw.
Huntley, you're not going to get – not that Huntley's worried about getting benched. Right. But that kind of vibe of like, we can do this. And you heard it from Huntley post-game against Weber State where they're like, what were you thinking when you were down 10-0 and it was second quarter? He's like, we can score. We'll be fine. We're just going to go out there and do it. And that attitude is what's missing. At this point.
And what doesn't make sense to me is like, so everyone's Sharif Shaw was available after practice, I think yesterday or whatever. And all the people were asking him, hey, well, what are you doing different this week? Like, they're about to see a ton of passes. Nothing. And he's like, nothing. Look, I tell the guys, I don't tell them they're failing. I tell them manage the damage, come back the next play, yada, yada, yada. Right? That mentality is not apparently available on the offensive side of the ball.
I want to come back to this Firewit stuff. Utah just lost.
Can I make one more statement before that?
Yes.
I'm not on the Firewit train, but if he's going to fire Troy Taylor, he needs to
That would be a big
mistake. That's my statement.
That would be the wrong move and would be more detrimental. More of the same.
Yeah.
More of the same idea of I am not responsible for the offense, that he has to be.
Yep. Okay, now say what you're going to say.
Utah is still going to win a lot of games. Utah's 2-1. They lost by 14 to one of the best teams in the country on a night where the
refs were against them.
Officiating was truly a problem.
Right.
To the point where it was a national conversation now about Pac-12 refs specifically related to this game and what the heck were they thinking. And it was also a really bad game for the offense, which we talked about this after an NIU. A team is going to have bad games. They're also going to have good ones.
Right.
And until you see the whole bell curve, you don't know what you're getting. And it is troubling to get two bad games in a row because it makes it more likely that the bell curve is over to the left.
It's flattening.
But you still don't know. And it's relevant that they were playing a team that was really, really good on defense, and that is one of the best secondaries in the country. If you watch the film, you'll see Utah never went deep. There were two or three deep passes. One of them was picked off. And it's because the safeties and defensive backs for that team are excellent. They're among the best in the nation.
NFL talent.
they knew that Utah wasn't going to be able to make those throws. And so they game plan to crush receivers over the middle and make them kind of pay for catching the ball. And it worked. And that stinks. It really stinks to see a team come out with a game plan for your team and it works. I mean, can you imagine how it felt in 2009 being an Alabama fan and being like, oh my gosh, Saban is not switching out these defensive tackles. He doesn't have time to get his defense set. How are we going to – they've already scored 21. What are we going to do? Oh, my gosh, these blitzes with the cornerbacks are working, and then we don't have a player to stop this. What are we going to do? It's a terrible feeling to get your butt kicked. But it happens, and it happens more when you're playing a top 10 defense like Washington. Utah's going to win 8 or 9 games, and at some point this year they're going to score 45 or 48 against a good Pac-12 defense. And you have to remember, as you're having this let's fire Coach Whittingham reaction, he's also responsible for all of those things. And he's been responsible for a lot of remarkable success. I think the perfect comparison is Nebraska just fired Bo Pelini and hired Scott Frost, who's 0-3. He hasn't won a game yet. So the grass is not always greener. And Coach Whittingham shouldn't be fired. But I do think that Mark Harlan or somebody senior to Coach Whittingham, there's not a lot of people, but there are some, could step in and say, you're not firing an OC.
Yeah.
So this OC is your OC for the next 2 years, and you have to deal with that. And I think that that's not necessarily a bad strategy. It's a big move to make on your, 6 week on the job, Mark Harlan, but it's not a bad idea either, I don't think.
All right, so let's talk about another subject. Let's talk about, well, I guess not another subject.
This is hot. This is good stuff. Let's move into Washington State. But I think we're
defensive rankings of Washington State. You ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. Rushing defense, number 2 in the Pac-12, number 16 NCAA. Number 3, passing defense. Number 3, and I think these are average yards. Pass efficiency defense, 5th in the Pac-12. Total defense, 2nd in the Pac-12. Scoring defense, 7th in the Pac-12.
They're good. They're good. They're not great.
Not great.
We're not looking at a team like Washington where there are few answers against defensive backs like that. Just like against a team like Utah, there are few answers against Julian Blackman and Jaylon Johnson. And, nobody's thrown on them yet. And we're probably going to get a little more getting thrown on here because that's what they do. And they run. The big thing that makes Washington State passing offense look so good is they run 70 passing plays. And so your brain remembers. Remember what I said, you're going to overreact to a handful of plays. Your brain is going to remember, like mine still does, what was it, 4th and 15 or something, with it, the year when Utah lost at the last minute after being up 21-0. And one of the DB's foot slipped out from under him. And River Craycraft got open on a slant route over the middle and picked it up and took it 30 yards. And I can't remember if it was a touchdown or a red zone, but it was a 4th down passing play. And my immediate reaction was, oh my gosh, Washington State, such a good passing team. But it was 4th and 15 because Utah just stopped them 3 times in a row, which is usually good enough to win a football game. But because the coach calls so many passing plays, your brain's going to lock on to those. And like I just described step for step a play from 4 years ago, even though I know that that's my brain playing tricks on me and that Washington State's passing offense is not actually that efficient or that great.
And that's something fans need to remember as we're watching this game. there's going to be a lot of pass plays.
Yeah.
Our secondary is not bad. It's really, really good.
It's amazingly good. You're going to see them score some points, and they are going to get some big passing plays because they're going to throw 70 times, and every once in a while you're going to be, you know, Jalen's looking the wrong way, or Julian's thinking about his, you know, his date tomorrow night. Like, you don't know, but something will happen.
Well, they're college kids.
Yeah, they make mistakes.
Sorry, I was not always focused in college. I don't expect these college kids to be focused.
I'm still not always focused.
Whoa. It's hard. Let's slow down there, Joseph.
We're all doing it. We're all out there thinking to ourselves, am I the only person feeling like this is a lot for me to handle? You're all doing it.
Which brings me to another point. Like, and I know that these people, I'm pretty sure these people aren't listening to this podcast, which is unfortunate. So here's a PSA. Like, stop tweeting at players.
Oh my gosh. Like, you make me so mad. People? Anybody, just don't tweet at players. I mean, that's it. That's the whole thing. Don't do it. Nope, not that one. No, not that kind either.
Not you want to wish guy.
Happy birthday?
Sure.
Sure. But that's it. Like, what Good the heck game. Are you doing?
Love that you're you? Sure.
But Pete Tonga should not be deleting his Twitter because people are making fun of his build. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It is. People are embarrassing. It's absurd.
And I dislike you. And honestly, real talk here, the only thing I don't like about this hobby of mine, covering the Utes and talking about the Utes and writing about the Utes, is the bad fans.
Yeah.
They make it so much less fun for everybody. And I mean, just check yourself a little bit, because Agreed. My goodness, some of you guys get so mean, and I'm not sure you're having fun, and I don't really know what's going on, but it's tough sometimes. And I can't imagine, if it's tough for me sitting up in the press box, I can't imagine what it's like to be Zach Moss or Tyler Huntley. And I mean, you're not looking for this stuff, but you're going to see some of it. And it's got to be just cut so deep. And it's just not the way you should be treating anybody ever.
Yeah. So sorry for a little tangent there, but needed. Let's get back to the Washington State
game. Defense. The defense is good.
I feel like it's a good Pac-12 defense. Here's an opportunity for the Utah offense. They're not perfect. The offense can come in, establish itself, get that ball rolling, build some momentum. Utes, I mean, according to Vegas, this is going to be a close game. Yeah. Hopefully the Utes come out with the win, probably a close one, and build that momentum going into next week, which if I remember off the top of my head is Stanford.
Without the win. If they can just score some points, I think that because the defense doesn't need any confidence. If they can just score some points and get off the schneid, and I think the bye week helps for the psychological reasons you were talking about. Leave it in the back rearview mirror. It's in memory now. This is the game we're going to play. And if Troy, I mean, what I said when Troy Taylor got hired is, does he have the fortitude to stand up to Coach Whittingham and say, no, I'm not going to run the ball 60 times a game. No, I'm not going to stop calling the plays that I call. I'm going to run my offense. And if it doesn't work the rest of this year, then it doesn't work the rest of this year, and we'll talk about what happens next. But I trust myself and I trust my guys, and we're going to win this football game for you. Tough. That's what he's got to do. And that's
true.
If you've ever met Kyle Whittingham, that is a very difficult thing to do to Kyle Whittingham. He's intimidating as hell. But somebody's got to do it, or Utah's never going to score any points.
Yep. All right. So, critical part of the podcast, predictions.
Oh, this is hard. Okay. I'm here. I'm back.
All right. I'm waiting.
I don't think Utah is going to win this game, mostly because it's on the road. I think Utah is favored by one right now by Vegas. It opened Utah down two. Now it's Utah up one. So it's going to be really close. But I think it's going to be 34-31. Washington State, the victor.
You little copycat.
Did I just steal it right? That's why you got to go first, right?
No.
I'll steal it right now from under you.
You copied my score. I'm picking a different victor.
Oh, all right. This is fun. Okay.
I'm going Utes 34-31. The offense is going to finally figure it out. And actually, correction, one of those touchdowns will be defensive.
Hopefully PETA. That was such a good pick and such a good run back. And to have it remembered in a bad way is just crappy.
So, nonetheless.
That game.
yeah. Okay, so now that we're past all that, we'll see what happens. But I expect a much better game from Utah against Washington State. Hopefully we won't have protectionist refs. Hopefully
what's really exciting is neither one of these teams are being protected for some kind of playoff or whatever run. USC's not going to the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. So hopefully, yeah, we will get refs doing what they do best, which is a terrible job, but at least an equally terrible job for everyone on the field. That's what we pray for from Pac-12. Can you just be equally terrible instead
agreed.
Of unbalanced terrible? How low a bar we have to set to have any hope.
So ridiculous.
All right. So I'm going to say with that, go Utes.
Go Utes. 34-31.
31-34.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.